when it's ajar. Epimetheus and Pandora were soon married. Epimetheus had an idea that Prometheus, who was far away, teaching the art of casting in bronze to the people of Varanasi, would not approve of Pandora. A quick wedding before his brother returned seemed to be a good idea. Epimetheus and Pandora were very much in love. That could not be denied. Pandora's beauty and attainments were such as to delight him every day, and in return his facile ability to live always for the moment and never to fret about the future gave her a sense of life as a light and lovely adventure. But one little itch tickled her, one little fly buzzed around her, one little worm burrowed inside. That jar. She kept it on a shelf in their bedroom. When Epimetheus had asked about it, she laughed. "Just a silly thing that Hephaestus made me to remind me of Olympus. It's of no value." "Pretty, though," said Epimetheus, giving it no further thought. One afternoon, when her husband was away practicing the discus with his friends, Pandora approached the jar and ran her finger round the rim of its sealed lid. Why had Zeus even mentioned that there was nothing interesting inside it? He would never have said such a thing if truly there weren't. She pieced the logic of it together in her mind. If you give a friend an empty jar, you would never concern yourself with mentioning that the jar was empty. Your friend might look inside one day and see that for themselves. So why should Zeus take the trouble to repeat that this jar contained nothing of any interest? There could only be one explanation. There was something of great interest inside, something of value or power, something either enchanting or enchanted. But no, she had sworn never to open it. A promise is a promise, she told herself, and straight away felt very virtuous. She felt it her duty to resist the spell of the jar, which now really seemed almost to be singing out to her in the most alluring way. It was excessively vexing to have an object so bewitching in her bedroom, where it could taunt and tempt her every morning and every night. Temptation loses much of its power when removed from sight. Pandora went to the small back garden, and next to a sundial that a neighbour had given them as a wedding gift, she dug a hole and buried the jar deep in the ground. She patted the earth flat and wheeled the heavy sundial on its plinth over the hiding place. There! For the next week she was as gay and skittish and happy as a person had ever been. Epimetheus fell even more in love with her and invited their friends over to feast and hear a song he had written in her honour. It was a happy and successful party, the last festival that the Golden Age was ever to know. That night, perhaps a little flushed with the praise that had flowed so freely in her direction, Pandora found it hard to sleep. Through the window of her bedroom, the moonlight shone down on the garden. The sundial's gnomon gleamed like a silver blade, and once again she thought she heard the music of the jar. Epimetheus was sleeping happily beside her. The moonbeams danced in the garden. Unable to stand it any longer, Pandora leapt down from her matrimonial bed and was out in the garden, unrolling the base of the sundial and scrabbling at the earth before she had time to tell herself that this was the wrong thing to do. She pulled the jar from its hiding place and twisted at the lid. Its waxen seal gave way, and she pulled it free. There was a fast fluttering, a furious flapping of wings, and a wild wheeling and whirling in her ears. Oh, glorious flying creatures! But no, they were not glorious at all. Pandora cried out in pain and fright as she felt something leathery brush her neck, followed by a sharp and terrible prick of pain as some sting or bite pierced her skin. More and more flying shapes buzzed from the mouth of the jar, a great cloud of them chattering, screaming, and howling in her ears. Through the swirling fog of these dreadful creatures, she saw the face of her husband as he came outside to see what was happening. It was white with horror and fright. With a great cry, Pandora summoned up the courage and strength to close the lid and seal the jar. On the garden wall, in the shape of a wolf, Zeus looked on, smiling the most terrible and wicked smile, as, like a cloud of locusts, the shrieking, wailing creatures clawed the air and circled the garden below them in a great vortex before flying up and away over the town, over the countryside, and around the world, settling like a pestilence wherever man had habitation. And what were they? These shapes. They were mutant descendants of the dark and evil children of Nyx and Erebus. They were born of Apate, deceit, Geras, old age, Oises, misery, Momos, blame, Keres, violent death. They were the offshoots of Ate, ruin, and Eris, discord. These were their names. Ponos, hardship. Limos, starvation. Algos, pain. Dysnomia, anarchy. Pseudia, lies. Nikea, quarrels. Amphilogiae, disputes. Machai, wars. Hisminae, battles. Androctasiae and Phonoi, manslaughters and murders. Illness, violence, deceit, misery, and want had arrived. They would never leave the earth. What Pandora did not know was that when she shut the lid of the jar so hastily, she forever imprisoned inside one last daughter of Nyx. One last little creature was left behind to beat its wings hopelessly in the jar forever. Its name was Elpis, Hope.